So, yes, we come to a talk on entering the stream. So, as you, some of you, perhaps most of you will know, we've been looking at, we've been giving talks based on the titles of talks that Bhante gave in the very early days of Triratna, or even before Triratna began. So, the talks that we're doing right now, 2 weeks ago we had Artur Priya giving a talk on going for refuge. Tonight I'm doing Entering the Stream. And in 2 weeks' time, Sangha Devi will be giving a talk on the arising of the Bodhicitta. And on the 10th of April, Vasantra will be giving a talk on the turning about in the deepest seat of consciousness. And all of these titles come from a series of talks that Bhante gave in London in 1965, and it was under the theme of the meaning of conversion in Buddhism. So he gave those talks at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara in 1965. So 2 years before the movement was founded and 3 years before the order began. And we're just revisiting the titles. We're not actually looking at the talks necessarily that he gave, although I would recommend it that you... They're in a little book called The Meaning of Conversion in Buddhism, and they're very, very good, the talks he gave originally. So, yes, tonight I'm going to talk about entering the stream. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at quite a bit from the Pali Canon, from the early Buddhist scriptures of the Pali Canon, what it has to say about entering the stream, or stream entry. The stream, by the way, the word in Pali is sota, and it's translated in the Pali dictionary as a stream, flood, or torrent. So you get the impression of a very swift flowing stream. And of course, this term stream is a metaphor, yeah? Stream. And it's used in different ways in the Pali. Pali Canon. It's also used in another way when we're speaking about crossing the stream. I found a quote from the Pali Canon where the two streams are mentioned in the same sentence, crossing the stream and entering the stream. Yeah? It says, just as the calves and feeble cattle breasted the stream of the Ganges and got safely across to the other shore, so too those bhikkhus who, with the destruction of the three fetters, are stream enterers, no longer subject to perdition, bound for deliverance, headed by enlightenment, by breasting Mara's stream, they get safely to the other shore. So we need to be careful we don't get our metaphors mixed up, yeah? And end up in the wrong stream. So most of us are already, as it were, in the stream of samsara, in Mara's stream. So we don't need any encouragement in that direction. And Mara, as it were, is quite content if we think we're in the stream of the Dharma when we're in Mara's stream. So what is the stream, then, that the stream entrant enters into? And interestingly enough, the Buddha asks this question himself. He asks Sariputta in the Samyutta Nikaya. The Buddha asks this very question. He says, Sariputta, the stream, thus it is said. And what, Sariputta, is the stream? The Noble Eightfold Path, Lord, is the stream. Right view, right resolve, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. And the Buddha answers, very good, Sariputta, very good. This Noble Eightfold Path is the stream. So that might be a bit puzzling in a way, because the Noble Eightfold Path is surely the very basics, yeah, the very basics that anyone has to practice. And here it's being equated with the stream that a stream entrant enters into. And elsewhere in the Pali Canon, it says that when you attain stream entry, what you have to do is practice the Noble Eightfold Path. So, now I think many of you, if you've done your Mitra study and so on, you'll know that there are two Noble Eightfold Paths, not just one. There's the mundane Noble Eightfold Path and the transcendental or supramundane Noble Eightfold Path. There's a sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya called the Great 40. It's sutta number 117, for those who are interested in that kind of thing. And in it, the Buddha goes through the Noble Eightfold Path, and he goes through in terms of a path that is still affected by the taints, partaking of merit, and a path that is noble, taintless, and supramundane. So he goes through the Noble Eightfold Path in these two ways. So there are two, as it were, levels to the Eightfold Path. So it's this supramundane Eightfold Path that is the stream into which the stream entrant enters. Yeah. And stream entry is traditionally known as what's called a dasana marga. So you've got a dasana marga, and then the other levels, as it were, once returner, non returner, arahant, they're known as a bhavana marga. So there's dasana marga, bhavana marga. So dasana means seeing, yeah, and bhavana means something like development. So there's the path of seeing and the path of development. And this is what Bhante refers to as vision and transformation. Dasana is almost literally means vision. Yeah? So vision and transformation. So stream entry is vision, as it were. So you practice the mundane, the lower, as it were, Eightfold Path, and that leads to this seeing, dasana, yeah, vision, and which is stream entry. And on the basis of that, then you practice the supramundane Eightfold Path, which is the path of bhavana, development. So this is what the tradition is telling us. So how do you enter the stream? Or how do you attain this seeing or vision? And actually, the metaphor of opening the Dharma eye is often used alongside the metaphor of stream entry. So you've got these two images or metaphors, opening the Dharma eye and entering the stream. So the Dharma eye opens, we see something more clearly, and as a result, we enter the stream. So it might be a kind of a mixed metaphor, but it sort of works, doesn't it? It's interesting with metaphors. We have a kind of natural tendency to want to pin down these descriptions and interrogate them to get a clearer idea of what's being said. But the whole point of using images and metaphors is to point towards something without pinning it down, or to point towards something that cannot be pinned down in that kind of way. Metaphors, in a way, they're intended to circumvent this natural tendency to be literal-minded, to want to concretize everything. Yeah. So it's worth reflecting sometimes on why some teachings are given as metaphors rather than as in a very conceptual way. And stream entry is one of those teachings. Entering the stream is definitely a metaphor. Opening the Dharma eye. It doesn't describe anything in a kind of conceptual way. However, Buddhists down the ages have not been deterred by metaphors. Yeah? They've not been deterred by metaphors and images, and attempts have constantly been made to pin them down throughout the history of Buddhism. They want to categorize, they want to label, define, subdivide, analyze, and so on. That's a big part of the history of Buddhism. It's a big part of the Buddhist scriptures. There's a whole Abhidharma which is dedicated to that, anyway. And of course, it's useful. Yeah, it's useful to have a bag of tools. Yeah. But having a bag of tools is not the same thing as accomplishing a task, yeah? To use More metaphors. So there are various ways we can try to pin down this image of entering the stream. We could look at what's called the first three fetters, which the stream entrant is said to break through. Of course, then we have fetters. Fetters is another metaphor, isn't it? It's another image. Yeah? The teaching is saying something like that ordinary people are firmly bound, yeah, imprisoned by 10 fetters. And I just looked it up in the dictionary. According to the dictionary, a fetter is a chain or manacle used to restrain a prisoner, typically placed around the ankles. Yeah? So it's a very strong image, I think, fetter. Yeah? In a way, what the image is saying is that that is how we seem from an awakened perspective. We look like we're shackled. We look like we're restrained or imprisoned. And the prison we're in is a prison of our own hearts and minds. We're fettered by our delusions. So these first three fetters in the Pali Canon are known as Satkaya Drishti, which is usually translated as self-view or personality view or something like that. Vichikitsa, usually translated as doubt and indecision. And Shilavrata Paramarsha, usually translated as reliance on rites and rituals, as ends in themselves. So the first fetter, Satkaya Drishti, it's the view that I, what we refer to as I, what we think of as me, that I constitute something ultimate, that I, as I am here and now, represent an unchanging, fixed entity. So the breaking of this fetter involves realizing that we do not have any fixed, unchanging essence beneath or behind our ever-changing mind and body. So this is the Buddhist doctrine of anatman. Yeah? So atman means something like soul or essence. And according to some Indian traditions, and in fact according to Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and so on, everything else changes except the soul, or as it is in Sanskrit, the Atman. Everything else changes, but the Atman remains the same. It is unchanging and eternal. So it's what's referred to sometimes as an eternalist view. And this is the view that's contradicted by the Buddha. This is what the Buddha is saying no to. He's saying, no, there isn't any fixed, unchanging entity there. The Buddha says we do not have any self in the sense of Atman, which is something fixed, something unchanging, behind or whatever the flux and flow of the body and mind. The Buddha is saying we do not have an eternal soul. Yeah. By the way, this doesn't mean that we don't have a self. It just means we don't have a fixed self. We don't have an unchanging self. We do have something that we could call a self. And so this view, the view that I have a fixed self or a soul or an atman, is a delusion. And this is the first fetter, the first shackle that holds us back from awakening. So at stream entry, the stream entrant breaks this fetter, breaks through this view to some degree. There are always degrees on this gradual path of Buddhist practice. So we can quite easily see through this view intellectually. It's quite easy to see that there's nothing fixed about us, I think. It's quite easy to see that. It's quite easy to see in a way that we're not completely separate from all other selves. You know what? But seeing it intellectually, seeing it that way, doesn't make us a stream entrant. because our behaviour may still be strongly influenced by our felt need to protect and defend and strengthen our fixed self, even if intellectually we don't believe in its existence. Yeah? So views are not just ideas, they are motivating forces. Views are motivating forces. Yeah? Forces that motivate us have their roots in our human evolution. They have their roots in our individual psychology and conditioning and in our emotional tendencies. So breaking the first fetter is not just a matter of nodding assent to the notion that we don't have an eternal soul or a fixed self. So it's not even enough to accept the idea that we're constantly changing physically, mentally, and emotionally. Breaking a fetter means seeing deeply enough into the delusion. Yeah? Seeing deeply enough into the delusion so that the seeing affects our behaviour. So you could say there are three levels to this seeing, this dasana, this seeing. The first level is knowing, as in being familiar with and accepting the teaching of no fixed self, as it were. Yeah? Then the second level is actually experiencing that, seeing something for ourselves, yeah, experiencing that we don't have this fixed self. And the third level is embodying that. We become what we have seen. Yeah? Bhante Sangharakshita talks about these fetters in much more in terms of our actual experience, which in some ways makes it clearer what we need to do. He calls the first fetter the fetter of habit. What he's saying is what we identify with as myself is basically a bunch of habits. Yeah? A habitual way of being, a habitual way of seeing ourselves, a habitual way of seeing other people, a habitual way of relating to the world, even a habitual way of doing things. Habitual responses, habitual thoughts, habitual emotions. And he says, breaking the fetter of habit means essentially getting out of the habit of being a particular kind of person. Which is interesting. So I think you need to gain some awareness of the habit before you can get out of it. Yeah, you have to get some awareness of the habit you're in, as it were, or the habit you are, in order to break free of it. And you do that. You need help from your friends, really. You need help from meditation, obviously, to go deeper into yourself and see yourself more clearly, to see the habits operating, as it were. You see the stories in your mind and so on. And you need the help of your friends as well. Yes, so I did say earlier there are degrees of breaking the fetter of self-view. So there are degrees before stream entry and there are degrees after stream entry of breaking that fetter. So even after the fetter has been broken, after the stream entrant has broken the first fetter, self-view still remains in a way. There's an explanation of this in the Pali Canon, in the Samyutta Nikaya. There's a monk called Kemaka, and according to the scripture, he's attained the level of non-returner, which is two steps further on from the stream entrant. Yeah? And he's explaining how although he has broken five fetters, he still has this conceit, I am, which lingers until all the fetters are broken. And he says, friends, it's not that I say I am form, nor do I say I am something other than form. It's not that I say I am feeling or perception or conditions or consciousness, nor do I say I am something other than consciousness. With regard to these skandhas, he's talking about the five skandhas, with regard to these, I am has not been overcome, although I don't assume I am this. So what he's saying is he's got a self-view, even though he doesn't identify it with any particular kind of category from the five standards. So stream entry basically is a particular level of seeing through the illusion of a fixed, unchanging self. But it's not a complete seeing through, because there are 10 fetters, not just 3 of them. So the next fetter is vichikitsa, translated as doubt, or sometimes as uncertainty. It's a sort of hesitation, a wavering. It's the but that gives voice to our resistance. So we say it sounds good, but, yeah, or I can see it's a good thing, but, or I know it would be good for me, but. So it's not a state of total disbelief in the path or the goal. But it's not quite a conviction either. Yeah? It's this hovering in-between state. It's a refusal to take a stand, in a way, to make a commitment, to act decisively. It's a fear of jumping in, being content, in a way, to look on without fully participating. And you could say, arguably, that this fetter is the most important one to break. Yeah, because when we come to look at the different kind of lists that talk about the attributes of a stream entrant, we find that what is given prominence in all the lists is the absolute conviction of the stream entrant, the absolute faith, shraddha, of the stream entrant in the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha. The stream entrant is someone whose faith or shraddha in the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha is firm and irreversible. And that's the primary characteristic of a stream entrant, their faith. So this fetter of doubtfulness, of wavering, is the key fetter to break. Because, of course, if we're full of indecision, we won't be able to apply ourselves to the practice in such a way as to break through the fetter of habit, the fetter of self-view. So Bhante talks about this particular fetter as the fetter of vagueness. And he says the antidote is thinking clearly. If we're indecisive and vague in this way, we need to think things through and look honestly at the alternatives before us and sort out our priorities in life. Yeah? So it means coming to some sort of decision, making up our minds and being willing to act wholeheartedly on the basis of our decision, our choice. I think thinking clearly is important, but I don't think it's the only way people approach this fetter of doubt or break this fetter of doubt. I think for many people, doubt or indecision or indecisiveness or lack of faith, you could say, is not overcome by thinking, but by having a heartfelt response to other people who have faith. Yeah? Having a heartfelt response to other people who have conviction. Because faith or conviction is embodied in people. And sometimes coming into contact with that, becoming friends, you could say, with people who have conviction, is the way to develop faith and conviction. Yeah? It's the way to overcome doubt and indecision, is to come into contact with and engage with people who are not plagued by doubt and indecision. This is one of the reasons, of course, why Dharma friendship is so important, spiritual friendship, Dharma friendship. Then the third fetter is Shilavrata Paramarsha. So Shila means a precept or a moral observance or a rule even. And Vrata means a religious practice or observance or a ritual usually. So Shilavrata is moral rules and rituals. And paramarsha means attachment or clinging. Yeah. So the fetter is about attachment to or clinging to moral rules and rituals as ends in themselves. Sometimes it's thought of in terms of superstition, taboos, conventions, rituals to propitiate the gods and things like that. There's one translator, Tanisaro Bhikkhu, translates it as protective charms and ceremonies. So he's seeing it more in terms almost of superstitions. Yeah? And it's contrasted with a trust in karma, a trust in the law of karma. Bhante talks about this fetter as the fetter of superficiality. So a superficial dharma practice is one where we meditate, we do puja, we even observe the precepts and so on, but without reflection, without understanding why. So we need to ask ourselves, what's the point of this practice? Is it effective? Do I understand what I'm doing and why I'm doing it? So the superficiality is about acting from the surface of ourselves, not going deeper. Yeah? So if we act from the surface, we're not being wholehearted. We're not bringing the whole of ourselves into the practice. So if we're being superficial, in a way we'll be acting from the conscious, rational, and even sentimental level and leaving out the unconscious depths, our deeper motives, our deeper drives. And Bhante recommends commitment as the antidote to this fetter. So commitment is acting with the whole of ourselves as far as we can. So that's something about the three fetters that are broken by a stream entrant. So you could imagine the fetters along the bank of the stream entrant breaks through them, then they're in the stream, yeah? But they mustn't cross this stream because it's a different stream from the one you cross. So how do we break these three fetters according to the tradition? What is the path to stream entry? So the Sanyutta Nikaya, which is one of the Pali Canon texts, it lays it out very neatly for us in a list of four factors. So these are the four factors for stream entry. Association with people of integrity is a factor for stream entry. Listening to the true Dharma is a factor for stream entry. Appropriate attention is a factor for stream entry. Practice in accordance with the true Dharma is a factor for stream entry. So these four constitute the path. So the path begins with associating with people of integrity, as this translator puts it. Sometimes it just says good people or admirable people. So there are lots of different translations. The Pali word is sapurisa, sapurisa. The purisa bit you're familiar with, those of you who know the Tiratnavandana, comes into the Tiratnavandana three times, look out for it. Sapurisa literally means something like true man or true individual. And this associating with people of integrity or with true individuals or with admirable people, however you translate it, it's about having a teacher or teachers. Yeah, it's about having people we can learn from by listening to what they're saying and following their example. So this is what we in Sri Ratna speak about as Kalyana Mitrata, or Dharma friendship, or spiritual friendship. In another Pali Canon text, the Buddha puts it in a slightly different way, but same thing, more or less. He says, with regard to external factors, I don't envision any other single factor like friendship with admirable people as doing so much for a monk in training who has not attained the goal but remains intent on the unsurpassed safety from bondage. A monk who is a friend with admirable people abandons what is unskillful and develops what is skillful. Then that's followed by a little verse which says, a monk who is a friend to admirable people, who's reverential, respectful, doing what his friends advise, mindful, alert, attains step by step the ending of all fetters. So some of the qualities of what's called a person of integrity or an admirable person, they're drawn out in different places in the Pali Canon. So in the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha says, a friend endowed with these three qualities is worth associating it with. Which three? They give what is hard to give, do what is hard to do, and endure what is hard to endure. So those are three qualities of the admirable person or the person of integrity. And then elsewhere in the same text it says, a person of integrity is grateful and acknowledges the help given to him. This gratitude, this acknowledgement, is second nature among admirable people. It is entirely on the level of people of integrity. So those are some of the qualities of a person of integrity. It also says elsewhere that a person of integrity is someone who rejoices in other people and doesn't speak ill of them. So the steps leading to stream entry begin with this associating with admirable people, with Kalyanamitras, Dharma friends. Then it goes through these other stages, listening to the teachings, giving appropriate attention to the teachings and putting them into practice. So you can see it involves a kind of a developing clarity and commitment. Yeah? And that's what enables us to break the fetters. Listening to the Dharma, according to the Pali Canon, if you listen to the Dharma, you get five rewards. Yeah? It says one hears what one has not heard before. So that's interesting because you're listening to the Dharma all the time. You imagine you'd be hearing constantly what you have heard before. But it says, no, by listening to the Dharma, you hear what you have not heard before. So that makes you think that listening isn't quite the same as just listening. Yeah? Listening and listening. There's different kinds of listening. So by listening to the Dharma, one hears what one has not heard before. Yeah? One clarifies what one has heard before. Okay? One gets rid of doubt. One's views are made straight, and one's mind grows serene. Okay, so if all of that happens, you know you've been listening to the Dharma. If it doesn't happen, then you haven't been listening to the Dharma. I'm teasing you. As regards appropriate attention, this is the third thing, appropriate attention, giving appropriate attention. This is a translation, by the way, of a phrase that some of you will be familiar with, which is yoniso maniskara, which is often translated as wise attention. Yeah? Here it was translated as appropriate attention. So it gives examples in the Majjhima Nikaya, it gives examples of what appropriate attention is, and what inappropriate attention is. And the way it gives the examples is it talks about what you should be asking, the sort of questions you should be asking your teacher. So it says appropriate attention, you should be asking a teacher questions such as, what is skillful? What is unskillful? What is blameworthy? What is blameless? What should be cultivated? What should not be cultivated? What having been done by me will be for my long-term harm and suffering, or what having been done by me will be for my long-term happiness and welfare. So in other words, what it's saying is that the questions we should be asking are practical questions. Yeah, practical the questions about things that would be of practical benefit to us on the path. And then it gives an example of inappropriate attention in terms of the kind of questions that we shouldn't be asking, in a way. He says, this is how one attends inappropriately. Was I in the past? Was I not in the past? What was I in the past? How was I in the past? Having been what was I in the past? Shall I be in the future? Shall I not be in the future? What shall I be in the future? How shall I be in the future? Having been what shall I be in the future? Or else, he is inwardly perplexed about the immediate present. Am I? Am I not? What am I? How am I? Where has this being come from? Where is it bound? So these are the kind of questions it says is inappropriate attention. And it suggests that this leads to what it calls a thicket of views. In other words, confusion. Yeah. So appropriate attention is what is of use to you on the path. Inappropriate attention, what's of no use to you on the path. Yeah? What just causes confusion? And then the fourth factor for stream entry is practice in accordance with the true Dharma. And that's basically a matter of developing right view. And it begins again, it's interesting, so we started with these four factors, the first of which was associating with people of integrity or admirable people. Then this fourth one, which is practice in accordance with the Dharma, this also starts with associating with people who are truly good or people of integrity. So I'm going to read you a passage from the Pali Canon now, so get you listening, proper listening to the Dharma, yeah? So it says, now I tell you, clear knowing and release have their nutriment. They are not without nutriment. And what is their nutriment? The seven factors for awakening. And what is the nutriment for the seven factors of awakening? The four establishings of mindfulness. And what is the nutriment for the four establishings of mindfulness? The three forms of right conduct. And what is the nutriment for the three forms of right conduct? Restraint of the senses. And what is the nutriment for restraint of the senses? Mindfulness and alertness. And what is the nutriment for mindfulness and alertness? Appropriate attention. And what is the nutriment for appropriate attention? Conviction. And what is the nutriment for conviction? Hearing the true Dharma. And what is the nutriment for hearing the true Dharma? Associating with people who are truly good. And it goes on to say, it gives you an image for it. So it's giving you these lists of things which come right back to associating with people of integrity or Kalyana Mitras. Then it gives you an image for it. It says, just as when the gods pour rain in heavy drops and crash thunder on the upper mountains, the water flowing down along the slopes fills the mountain clefts and rifts and gullies, the little ponds, the big lakes, the little rivers, the big rivers. When the big rivers are full, they fill the great ocean, and thus is the great ocean fed, thus is it filled. In the same way, when associating with truly good people is brought to fulfillment, it fulfills the conditions for hearing the true Dharma. Conviction, appropriate attention, mindfulness and alertness, restraint of the senses, the three forms of right conduct, and so on. Yeah? And then when the seven factors of awakening are brought to fulfillment, they fulfill the conditions for clear knowing and release. Thus, clear knowing and release fed. This is thus brought to fulfillment. So this path leading towards stream entrant, what it's saying is the basis of the whole path, the foundation, is associating with people of integrity, the truly good, it's Dharma friendship, it's Kalyana Mitrata. So that's the beginning of the path of stream entry, but it's also the essential ingredient all along the way. That's why it keeps cropping up, because it's the essential ingredient at each stage to guard against delusion, yeah, to guard against inappropriate attention or practicing in the wrong way. So it's there all the way through. There's this kind of element of interaction with a teacher or teachers, with Kalyanamitras, with people of integrity. So that's a key factor for stream entry, according to the Pali Canon tradition. So I just want to go on now to say something about the characteristics or attributes of a stream entrant, again, as they're laid out in the Pali Canon. There are quite a number of lists of the characteristics of a stream entrant. Often there are lists of four things. Yeah, not always the same four, by the way. The factor that's common to all the lists is that you have unwavering confidence in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In fact, that's the first three factors of most of these lists of four. I think all of the lists of four. The first three things are unwavering conviction or faith in the Buddha, unwavering faith in the Dharma, unwavering faith in the Sangha. And the fourth characteristic is the one that changes. Sometimes it's the characteristic might be virtues that are appealing to the noble ones, meaning a high degree of skillfulness. Or the fourth attribute sometimes is just generosity. Yeah? Or it might be wisdom, or it might be right view. So I'm not going to go into all of those lists. What I'm going to do is look at a different list. There's a list of seven characteristics of a stream entrant. It's in the Kosambiya Sutta, which is Sutta number 48 in the Majjhima Nikaya, if you guys want to look it up. So this list of seven things. The first is that the stream entrant's mind is free of the five hindrances. The text says, not obsessed or enthralled by the five hindrances. I'm going to assume that you all know what the five hindrances are. If you don't, ask somebody. Yeah? It's not just that, though. It also says, not obsessed or enthralled by speculation about this world or the other world, which is kind of that inappropriate attention we were talking about earlier, and also not obsessed with arguing, quarrelling and disputing, stabbing others with verbal daggers. So that's the first characteristic of a stream entrant, not being obsessed or enthralled by the hindrances, by speculation or by disputing. Yeah? Then the second characteristic of a stream entrant is that they experience serenity. So again, we came across serenity before. If you listen to the Dharma, one of the things you experience, one of the rewards, is a serene mind, according to this. And then the third one is a stream entrant is full of confidence in the Dharma Vinaya, the teachings and the practice. And then fourthly, the stream entrant is ethical. And what it says is, although he may commit some kind of offence for which a means of rehabilitation has been laid down, still he immediately confesses, reveals, and discloses it to the teacher or to wise companions in the holy life. Having done that, he undertakes restraint for the future. So it's basically being incredibly scrupulous about ethics, yeah, and immediately confessing any non-observance of the precepts. Yeah. Then the fifth characteristic of a stream entrant is that, it's an interesting one, even though he or she may be active in helping or teaching others, they never neglect their own practice. Yeah. And the sixth characteristic is that they're eager to hear the Dharma being taught and give it full attention. And then seventhly, the seventh characteristic of a stream entrant is that when the Dharma is being taught, they become inspired and delighted. Yeah? So those are the characteristics or attributes of someone who is a stream entrant. Their mind is not occupied by the hindrances, by speculations, by quarrelling, arguing and disputing. They are serene. They have complete faith in the Dharma and practices. They're very ethically skillful and confess even small indiscretions. They keep up their own practice while helping others. They're eager for Dharma teaching, and they're inspired and delighted by the Dharma. In Suvajra's book about Dardo Rinpoche, I guess most of you know who Dardo Rinpoche was, one of Bhante's teachers. In Suvajra's book, The Wheel and the Diamond, about Dardo Rinpoche's life, he says, Dardo Rinpoche had not felt like a great lama. Although everybody had treated him as one, it nevertheless occurred to him that despite his feelings, he should try to act like a tulku by developing wisdom and compassion. And over the course of time, he'd become a Rinpoche. So the reason I mentioned that is because as I was thinking about this thing, it occurred to me that we could apply the same thing to stream entry. Many of us might naturally, from time to time, wonder, where are we on the spiritual path? Yeah, we may even want to know if we're stream entrants. Yeah, and one way of answering this question, if you're really unsure and it bothers you, could be to assume that you are a stream entrant and then to behave like one. Mm. Yeah, so just as Dardo Rinpoche did, he just thought, actually, so say I'm a lama, okay, I'll act like that. And if you do that, then you're moving in the right direction. So if we behave like stream entrants, then whether we are or not, we will be going in the right direction. When the Buddha was alive, he seems to have had no hesitation in pointing out who was a stream entrant. For instance, there's a sutta called Advice from Nandika in the Majjhima Nikaya, where the Buddha announces to the monks that 500 bhikkhunis, female disciples, are stream entrants and beyond. Yeah? But he also adds, because I think Ananda has said something about it, he says that he is able to say that because he knows, but when Ananda or Sariputta or somebody else says it, it's because they have faith, not because they know. Yeah. So he seems to be saying among his disciples that he was the only one who could really tell whether somebody was a stream entrant or not. So he said these 500 bhikkhunis were stream entrants and beyond. Okay, so I'm coming close to the end now. I want to just look at two further questions. Firstly, what are the benefits of stream entry, which I'll cover really quickly. And secondly, what comes after stream entry? Yeah. Because you really need to know that, don't you? So, the benefits of stream entry. So, according to the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha says that a stream entrant will have a long life, beauty, happiness, status, and influence. Yeah? And he also says that a stream entrant overcomes what we call death proximate karma. So I'll tell you just, there's another story from the Pali Canon. There's a monk called Mahanama, who's a stream entrant, according to the Pali Canon. And he tells the Buddha that sometimes when he's out and about in the city, he encounters various calamities and accidents and so on. It's kind of funny in a way, it's strange. He says, I meet with a runaway elephant, a runaway horse, a runaway chariot, a runaway cart, or a runaway person. At times like that, my mindfulness with regard to the Blessed One gets muddled. My mindfulness with regard to the Dharma and the Sangha gets muddled. And the thought occurs to me, if I were to die at this moment, what would be my destination? What would be my future course? So he's worried about his what we call his death proximate karma. And the Buddha replies, He says, have no fear, Mahanama, have no fear. Your death will not be a bad one. Your demise will not be bad. If one's mind has long been nurtured with conviction, nurtured with virtue, nurtured with learning, nurtured with generosity, nurtured with discernment, then when the body is eaten by crows, vultures, hawks, dogs, hyenas, or all sorts of creatures, nevertheless, the mind, long nurtured with conviction, virtue, learning, generosity, and discernment, rises upwards and separates out. So he's saying, that's a benefit of stream entry. You don't have to worry about the state of mind just when you die. Yeah? Of course, the other benefit is that you've only got a maximum of 7 more lives before you gain enlightenment. So what is the next step for a stream entrant? So stream entry, as I said, is dasana, it's seeing, vision. And what follows is bhavana, development, transformation. I already mentioned the supramundane eightfold path as the path of practice for a stream entrant. Another way of seeing it is that stream entry occurs at the 8th stage of the spiral of positive nidanas, the stage of knowledge and vision of things as they really are. So the next step for the stream entrant there is the following 4 nidanas. Or the next immediate step is the nidana, which is sometimes translated as disentanglement or withdrawal. Yeah. Bhante says about this, he says, this stage represents a clean, even serene, withdrawal from involvement in conditioned things. When you deeply see, when you deeply realize that conditioned things, all the things which you normally come into contact with, are unsatisfactory, that they're going to pass away, and that there is no real truth or reality to them, you become less and less attached to them. You withdraw from them. You lose interest. This stage of withdrawal, he says, is a sort of sitting loose to life. You may be doing what is necessary objectively, but subjectively, you're not caught up in it. This is what is meant by withdrawal. You're still part of the conditioned, but you're in your heart, you've withdrawn from it. Another hint as to the next step for a stream entrant is in the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, the account of the Buddha's last days and death. So in that sutta, the Buddha at one point says to Ananda, he says, in this assembly, there is not one monk who has doubts or uncertainty about the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha, or about the path of practice. Ananda, the least one of these 500 monks is a stream entrant, incapable of falling into states of woe, certain of Nibbana. And then he gives these stream entrants, he gives them his final exhortation. He says, all conditioned things are impermanent, strive on diligently, or with heedfulness strive on. Appamadena sampadeta. So however you translate it, he's basically saying, continue to make an effort. So that's the Buddha's final advice to stream entrants. There's a sutta in the Pali Canon where Sariputta is asked about what should a stream entrant do as well. In fact, he's asked, what's the next stage for anyone, for a monk who's not a stream entrant, for a stream entrant, for non-returner, once returner, all of them. And he gives the same answer to all of them. He says, he gives it in terms of the 5 skandhas. A virtuous monk should attend in an appropriate way to the 5 skandhas as inconstant and so on. Basically what he's saying is that we need to give attention, meditate, reflect and so on in such a way that we undermine the motivating power of ego identity, that we really undermine the motivating power of ego identity. And he says that's the practice at every level, because you can always go beyond. He even says for an arahant, he says, although for an arahant there is nothing further to do and nothing to add, to what has been done. Still, these things, meaning appropriate attention to device gandhis, when developed and pursued, lead both to a pleasant abiding in the here and now and to mindfulness and alertness. So I think the message is, whether you're a stream entrant or not a stream entrant, or wherever you are on the spiritual path, you just need to get on and practice with diligence, strive on, as the Buddha said. So that's it.